Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It's an insider's look at the NBA and the culture surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yeah, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
The Volume.
The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. UConn is currently the favorite to win the title at plus 500. My favorite team, hometown Tucson, Arizona Wildcats, are currently plus 1,300. Plenty of good bets to check out. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code HOOPS. That's H-O-O-P-S. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code HOOPS. That's H-O-O-P-S. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY to 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. All right, welcome to Hoops Tonight here at The Volume. Happy Sunday, everybody. Hope all of you guys are having a great weekend. We're going to be hitting two games from the Saturday night slate. The Golden State Warriors got a much-needed win for the standings on the road in Los Angeles against the Lakers. And then the New York Knicks go on the road to Sacramento in a super intense and physical rock fight of a game and get a big win over the Kings. We're going to be breaking down both of those games from the perspective of both teams. Just so you guys know, for the schedule for this week, we're going today and we're going every single day for the next 7 days until next Sunday when I leave for one last little trip. I'm going out of town with my wife to do some skiing in Lake Tahoe. One little rest before we get into the playoffs. As you guys know, when we get into the playoffs, we go live on YouTube after the final game every single night during the playoff run. So a little bit of a calm before the storm. So we're going to have a crazy week this week going every single day. Then we're going to take a break from Sunday through Wednesday next week, and I'll be back on that following Thursday. You guys know the drill. Before we get started, subscribe to our brand new YouTube channel. It'd mean a lot to me if you guys would take a second to scroll down and hit that subscribe button. Don't forget about our podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts under Hoops Tonight. It's also super helpful if you leave a rating and a review on the podcast feed. Don't forget about my Twitter feed at @_JasonLT, where I put the film breakdowns from time to time as well as show announcements. And last but not least, keep dropping mailbag questions in the YouTube comments. No mailbag in this episode, but we will be doing several of them over the course of the next week. All right, let's talk some basketball. So first quarter looked more or less like a lot of the Lakers games against the Warriors in the last couple of years, right? Like the specifically just AD kind of sagging off of non-shooters and causing some problems around the basket. Laker offense too has been cooking on all cylinders. for a couple months now, and they won that first quarter 36-30, had good motion, good ball and player movement. Everything was looking good. LeBron came out laser focused. He had his first six shots in this game, bouncing back after a rough game on the road in Sacramento. Anthony Davis, in the first quarter alone, goes for 8 points, four rebounds, two assists, a steal, and a block with no turnovers, playing really, really well. But then he gets hit in the eye, and it swells up on him, and it has to leave the game. And from there, you know, it's funny, there was a comment from J.J. Redick. It was actually in the early third quarter, if I remember correctly. But he pointed out a truth, which is that, you know, Anthony Davis gives the Lakers a somewhat coherent defense. They've actually been a top 15 half court defense most of the year, and spent a good portion of the year in the top 10 for half court defense. Their primary issues are what happens on the perimeter and in transition, which is why they can't reach the level that they've been in years past. But like, Anthony Davis really is the guy that anchors everything for the Laker defense. And when he goes out, J.J. Redick pointed out, he's like, not a whole lot else in terms of defensive personnel, right? Like, you've got LeBron James, who when he's engaged can be a deeply impactful defensive player, but especially in a game like this where he has to do so much offensively, you could pretty much count on him to, you know, save and conserve energy on that end of the floor. They had a big defensive mistake late in this game where he lost Draymond Green on a fake dribble handoff to go to the basket, and it's because he has to save his legs, right? And then in general, he's 39 years old in a regular season game. Like, you're not going to get great defense, consistent defense out of him, right? D'Angelo Russell and Austin Reeves, not great. You know, Rui Hachimura, he's a good low man and rebounder from time to time, but he's not a good perimeter defensive player. Max Christie is a good perimeter defensive player, but he's young, a little helter-skelter, doesn't get a ton of minutes that frequently. Jared Vanderbilt is a really good defender, but he's hurt. So, like, they just don't really have great defensive personnel after Anthony Davis is out. They promptly gave up 72 points in the second and third quarters combined. The Lakers tried blitzing with Jackson Hayes. That was basically the defensive strategy they went with to try to slow Golden State down. And it, the main rationale there is Jackson Hayes is not a good drop coverage big. He's a guy that, like, when he sits back in a coverage, he either is too passive and lets the guard get too comfortable, or he gets too aggressive and he fouls a lot. And so, you know, they one of the ways that the Lakers have countered that is just use his athleticism. So they'll blitz and try to make things happen from there. But then they just got absolutely eviscerated in the paint. They gave up 62 points in the paint in this game. Steph by himself made 9 field goals in the paint. Did a lot of damage on Austin Reeves on curls coming off of screens, slipping screens, and back cuts. There's a big one late in the game where, because like, one of the things that the Lakers try to do with Steph is top lock him, which what that means is position yourself between Steph and the screen so that he can't come off. And there was one in the fourth quarter where he kind of went and set a pin down, and then he was getting ready to come off his own pin down to go up to the top of the key, but Austin was on his high side trying to deny him the screen, and Draymond Green had the ball in the post, and Steph literally just noticed that Austin was on his high side and there was nobody behind him, and Steph just slipped to the basket and Draymond hit him for an easy layup. And one of the consistent issues I saw in this game, and it's something I'm going to talk about a lot, but like, you know, when Steph is being the blender that he can be off the ball, running through all of these off-ball screening actions and stuff, you have to find somewhere in the off the ball to help, right? And like, one of the big opportunities in this game, because Brandon Podziemski is not a super aggressive scorer, because he's a ball movement guy, he's more of like a kind of like a connective tissue type of piece, and because he hasn't shot the three exceptionally well, D'Lo was the guy who could be in position to help on so many of these, and he just did absolutely nothing. I trimmed several examples of this. You go onto my Twitter feed at @_JasonLT and look in the replies, and you'll see where you're going to see Austin Reeves just chasing like crazy, or Max Christie chasing like crazy, and then D'Lo is just kind of standing upright, not doing anything to help, and not guarding Brandon Podziemski either, just kind of standing upright in the lane and not doing anything. So the Warriors pretty quickly took control of the game after Anthony Davis went down. LeBron did keep it close. LeBron had another great night. He had 40 points, 8 rebounds, and 9 assists. Could have been 43 too, if that 3-point shot in the corner, if he didn't put his heel on the line. He was really picking on Trayce Jackson-Davis and switches and having some success on that front. But the Lakers just tried to outscore Golden State, and that their skill guards just weren't good enough, right? Like, they didn't get a good enough type of offensive game to make that happen. Austin and D'Lo combined to go 5-for-19 from three. I want to credit Brandon Podziemski and Andrew Wiggins on this one. I thought Andrew Wiggins, and he's a specific type of guy that can give D'Lo some issues, but I thought Wiggins did an incredible job on D'Angelo Russell and forced him into some really janky shots and some ugly misses. It wasn't like D'Lo was out there missing a ton of clean looks. Like, he missed a couple of open catch and shoot looks, but like, I thought Andrew Wiggins just did an amazing job on D'Lo. And then Brandon Podziemski, I thought he did an amazing job on Reeves. Like, you know, the Lakers, whenever Austin Reeves gets the ball and there's like 6 or 7 seconds on the shot clock, he's a good ISO player. Coming into last night, he was up over a point per possession, and ISO, he's a guy that like has a good set of moves and counters and can get to the foul line. So like, he's a guy that they can trust to kind of just rescue a possession by playing one-on-one basketball, right? And a lot of those possessions last night ended with him kind of going to work on Brandon Podziemski. And Podziemski did just a really, really good job in individual defense on him. Forced him into some tough misses, some ugly misses. So really good perimeter defense from Podziemski and Wiggins. And like I said so many times this season, I really think that's a strength of this Warriors roster. But the Warriors in general were really taking advantage of the Lakers' backline defense. That's the piece that I want to focus on here for a little bit. So I'm primarily looking at, on the backline, Jackson Hayes, Rui Hachimura, and LeBron James, but also D'Angelo Russell, like I talked about earlier. And essentially, like, when you bring a guy up to the level of the screen, he has a very specific job. He's got to make it difficult to make that over-the-top pass. I talk a lot about like how Dame sometimes will throw swing passes out of blitz situations. Jalen Brunson did this several times last night against the Kings. And it's because in many cases, when that screen defender does a good job getting active hands and taking away the passing angles, even though the short roll man is open, it can be difficult to get the ball there. Now, Steph every once in a while will just make some like preposterous, really nice, like kind of looping pass over the top against some good defense. But like, the reality is like, you have to make that really difficult. If you let them easily get that ball to the roll man, you're in a tough spot. Because now it's 4-on-3 and Draymond's just so good in that situation. How many times in this game did you see Draymond catching the roll and Kuminga cut out of the weak side corner for a dunk, or Andrew Wiggins cut out of the weak side corner for the dunk? It's that classic tic-tac-toe of the Warriors offense. Steph gets a blitz, pass to Draymond on the roll. Draymond draws in the help defender from the weak side corner. Instead of standing there waiting for a three-point shot, they cut along the baseline. The lob passes there, and as long as it's timed perfectly, it's a bucket every single time. And they just did a ton of damage there. In general, like, a lot of those low man possessions would end up being someone like a D'Angelo Russell, and he would step up and like Trayce Jackson-Davis would just go through him into the basket and finish. Or the backdoor cut would be wide open for a layup. There's even a possession where, to Trayce Jackson-Davis's credit, he caught in the dunker spot and Jackson Hayes recovered and he just bodied him and hit a little left-handed hook over the top. Like, as Steph was doing his job of bringing that screen defender up to the level of the screen, in those 4-on-3 situations, the Lakers just did not get enough stops. And look, here's the thing. That's a precarious position for anybody, but like, you can't let them score every single time in those situations. And I really thought the Warriors took advantage of a weakness in the Lakers roster when you remove Anthony Davis from the equation. Anthony Davis is just so much better at pressuring and making those passes to the roll man more difficult. And then in general, the Lakers' weak side defensive personnel just doesn't do a good enough job. And the Warriors really took advantage of that.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider's look at the NBA and the culture surrounding the league. Every week, the 5-time All-Star and number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. CJ will bring his A-list comedian buddies to keep it light and fire off some hoops takes. Plus, John will be inviting current and former NBA players, friends, and teammates to join the show as well to give their unfiltered accounts of what really goes on in the league from a player's perspective. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, Everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yeah, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card. Three shout outs on the Warriors front that I wanted to hit before we get out of here. Klay Thompson as the secondary scorer. Really had his movement three off the catch working. There were some ones too where he was in a phone booth where he was coming off and there was a hedge and he just found that little tiny bit of space and rose up. He was 4 for 7 on threes that he took flying off of screening actions. Overall, he scored 14 points in 9 off-screen possessions. Trayce Jackson-Davis figuring out some of the specific details of the two-man game. So one of the things that you guys may or may not have heard about as you follow other basketball content out there, something we haven't talked a ton about on this show, is the idea of a Gortat screen. So what a Gortat screen is essentially like the big man will set a screen on the ball, right? And as he sets a screen on the ball, the on-ball defender is chasing over the top, and so there's a driving lane there. Right? So the ball handler now is working downhill. The screen defender, right, the guy defending the screener, is trying to get back into the play to guard the ball handler coming downhill. But what will happen in a lot of these cases is literally the big man that is the screener for a Gortat screen will actually position himself to box out the screen defender instead of rolling hard to the rim to try to make himself available for a dunk or finding a sweet spot in the middle to catch the ball for a finish. Instead, the one thing he'll focus on is just boxing that help defender out of the lane. And so essentially, imagine Steph coming off of a ball screen and a Max Christie or an Austin Reeves trailing Steph over the top. And then essentially, Trayce Jackson-Davis, instead of rolling to the rim, is just going to get into Jackson Hayes' way, or get into Rui Hachimura's way, and just kind of form a wall. And now Steph just meanders into the lane for an easy layup. He had two examples of that that worked really well. There was one in the first half where he boxed Rui out as Steph was driving and he got a layup. And then there was a second one in the fourth quarter, a ball screen with Chris Paul. So the way the action worked in this case, Max Christie was guarding Chris, and Chris had the ball in his right hand, kind of on the left wing extended. So here comes Trayce Jackson-Davis to set the screen, and he sets it like he's going to get Chris towards his right-hand side. And so as a result of that, Max jumps up onto the high side to try to get over the screen. Trayce quickly flips the angle, turns around and screens the other side of Max, and Chris crosses over and goes left instead. Now, that re-screening thing is a really important piece of screening angles, because like a lot of times the really good on-ball defenders that are quick, they will find a way to navigate the first screen. But when you've navigated the first screen, many times you're out of position to then quickly navigate another screen. And so as the screener, if you can quickly flip the angle on him, you can catch him out of position. So it starts with that. Now Max Christie is on the high side, if you're facing the basket on the right side. Trayce Jackson is screening and Chris Paul is driving towards the left, but he snakes back across to get back to his right-hand side. Now, Max Christie is going to try to recover back into the play, but Trayce Jackson-Davis is literally in his way. And Trayce does this like really slow roll to the basket. And on the slow roll to the basket, he stays in Max's way for another like 2 or 3 steps. And that allowed Chris Paul to get a big opening at the right elbow, tons of space, and he rose up and knocked it down. So between the Gortat screen in the first half that got Steph the wide open layup, the flipping screening angle thing on to get Chris Paul open, and then kind of dragging his roll into Max Christie's way to create that opening, those are just like higher level pick and roll concepts that are so vitally important to like finding openings against good defense. And that's the thing, like that's the one guy in that game for the Lakers that's a good defensive player is Max Christie. The one guy that like that's what he does, he's in the league because he does that well. And like those are the kinds of guys where you have to be more diligent about the details to find openings. And I just thought it was really encouraging to see Trayce kind of showing some of that higher level stuff. And look, he struggled with LeBron on switches in this game. But so do most centers in the NBA. I thought it was a good performance. And then Jonathan Kuminga, he had he's ripping off another streak of 20-point games. That's his fourth in a row. He had four assists with one turnover. A really smart play in the first half where he was posting up Spencer Dinwiddie. I've talked a lot about how teams are starting to throw late help after he puts the ball on the ground to his left-hand side. And there was an example of that in this game where posting Dinwiddie makes a move towards the middle. Jackson Hayes hard helps on his left-hand side, and he just makes the drop-off pass to the guy in the dunker spot. Easy stuff that is going to make the game easier for Jonathan Kuminga in the long run. Last 29 games for Jonathan Kuminga, 21 points per game, 6 rebounds and 3 assists on 55% from the field, 41% from 3, and 79% from the line. Think about how crazy that is. 29 games, so literally like over a third of the season, right? Or yeah, right? Am I right about that? Yeah, over a third of the season. And then over 21 points per game, legitimate defensive rebounding, 3 assists with only, I think, 2. I think he's, I want to say he's got about a 1.5 assist to turnover ratio in that span. I should have put it in my notes, but I didn't. But, and he's also shooting really efficiently from the various spots on the floor where he needs to work. So really, really encouraging stretch from Jonathan Kuminga. That it, like, regardless of what happens with the Warriors this year, that to me is like just something you take into the future as a massive success from this particular campaign. On the Lakers front, when AD goes down, they basically just have no shot to beat any serious team unless they shoot the lights out, and they just didn't in this particular game. I have two other things that I wanted to quickly hit. One, I thought this was a game that kind of demonstrated some of the ugly side of what comes with the D'Angelo Russell experience. Not just this game, but the three of their last four games. So the two losses to Sacramento and then this game. Like, just struggling to be a productive and effective offensive player against length and athleticism on the perimeter that applies real ball pressure, and how that can kind of get under his skin a little bit. And then secondly, just not doing enough off the ball defensively to make it so that he is a positive in the net, meaning like his offensive production supersedes whatever downsides come in other areas of the game. Like, just way too much standing around. It just is not acceptable for a guy that like has had struggles in the playoffs, and you're trying to get to a point where he's a usable player in that setting. And it's like, those are the kinds of things that kind of rear their ugly head with him. And again, it's only a 4-game stretch, and he was really good for months before that. So I don't want to like hyper focus on the negative here, but this last stretch of games from D'Lo has felt a little bit like a backslide, so to speak. And so I hope that D'Lo can kind of snap out of it, because like the Lakers just desperately need him to be the offensive player he was over the last couple of months, while also being a usable defensive player, which we know he's capable of being. I have seen games this year where D'Lo has been a useful off-ball defensive player, and it's just a matter of commitment at this point. Lastly, the Lakers, you know, this is the kind of thing that happens. I don't know what happens if AD doesn't get hurt. I would imagine the Lakers probably win that game 60% of the time if AD's healthy, right? At least, if not more. The Lakers are a good home team. They played well when AD was on the floor in the same ways that they typically do. That's not to say the Warriors couldn't win that game. They certainly could. I'm not trying to be like, oh, AD got hurt, the Lakers should have won. I'm just saying, like, yeah, you're right. You probably win that game if AD is healthy, but he didn't finish the game. He hurt his eye. And sometimes in the 82-game season, your star gets hurt and you just lose. And normally, that would be something you could live with over the course of an 82-game season. But the Lakers tricked off their margin for error this year. That 3-10 stretch after the in-season tournament win removed their ability to be able to withstand that sort of thing. Yesterday, AD gets hit in the eye, misses the rest of the game. They drop a game to the Warriors. Now it's a catastrophe. You've dropped down to the 10 seed, and you absolutely have to beat the Warriors. I'm not even sure if that will help them get there's a matchup with the Warriors in April. I'm not even sure if that would be enough for them to get the tiebreaker, because I'm not sure what the other details of the tiebreaker are, but you're now down to 1-2 against the Warriors, which could end up hurting you in the tiebreaker situation. If you win this game and you win in April, you win the tiebreaker, right? So you've removed that from the equation. It's a huge, like, it's a huge catastrophe for the Lakers, the situation that they're in. Whereas, let's just take a look at a couple of games on their schedule. If they would have gone differently, how different it would have looked. Like, I think they've lost at least a half dozen games this year that they had no business losing. But let's just look at a couple specifics. They lost to the Spurs the week after winning the in-season tournament. The Spurs were on an 18-game losing streak, guys. They had lost 18 games in a row, and they beat the Lakers. Literally a week after they beat, less than a week after they beat the Pacers to win the in-season tournament after kicking the shit out of the Pelicans and beating the Suns. They were playing excellent basketball, and then they just relaxed. They lost to a Dallas Mavericks team that was completely injury-riddled. I'll accept that one, but the one to the Spurs, like, that's completely unacceptable. They lost to the Miami Heat at home without Jimmy Butler in a game that the Lakers came completely lifeless out of the locker room. And then they lost to that terrible Grizzlies team that was 11-23 going into the game. Flip just those three games. Forget about everything else. Flip just those three games. And now Anthony Davis gets a corneal abrasion and misses the rest of the game, and you drop a game, and you're still 39-29 and a half game out of the sixth seed. That's your situation if you just don't trick off those games in the middle of the year. Add a couple more now. They lost at home to the Brooklyn Nets in a game that they jumped them early and then just quit in the second half. Lost to the Brooklyn Nets. Inexcusable. At home. Then they got their ass kicked in back-to-back games against the Rockets and Hawks in games they didn't play hard. They gave up 273 points in the two games. Those are the games right before they went in and beat Boston without LeBron James and Anthony Davis in a game they did bring hellacious effort from start to finish. So just take those three games. Win those three. Then if AD gets poked in the eye and you drop a game to Golden State, you're still the five seed. You're the five seed. That's what this has meant. Like, because here's the thing. Like, the Lakers are not a top-tier championship contender. They did not address their biggest weakness at the deadline or over the summer. And so they do not have the matchup versatility they need to win four playoff rounds. Like, I don't think they're in that tier. They can. It's just like such an incredible long shot, right? And it's because they didn't address their biggest weakness. But they are a good NBA team. But because for extended stretches of the season, they just came out and played bad basketball against teams they had no business losing to, they are in a horrible predicament in the play-in tournament when they should be what this team actually is a middle-of-the-West type of team. They should be in that 4-5 range. That's how good they are. When you look at the talent on their roster, they should be in that 4-5 range. That's the quality of that basketball team. But they are instead down in the play-in tournament at 36-32 and will likely have to win two road games to even get a chance to play a team for a best of seven. One last stat to drive this point home. I saw this 2 days ago from Alex Regla, a guy who does an amazing job covering the Lakers for SB Nation. I highly recommend you guys check him out. He tweeted this out the other day, and I thought it was super interesting. The Lakers are 16-12 against teams that are in the top 10 in point differential. In those games, they have the sixth best net rating in the league. So when it comes to the Lakers playing against really good teams, they are one of the very best teams in the league. 16 wins, comfortably above 500, sixth best net rating in the league. And that's despite their personnel limitations. That's despite the fact that they don't have a guard or wing that is a starting caliber player, that is a plus offensive player and a plus defensive player. They do not have one on the roster. And they're still 16-12 against the top 10 teams in the league by point differential. Against the middle 10 teams, against teams 11 through 20, in point differential, they are 5-15 after last night's loss to the Warriors. 5-15. And they have the sixth worst net rating out of that group. What does that tell you? That's what I've been preaching all year with this team. Like, are they Boston or Denver? No, they needed a trade and they needed a lot of things to go right this year to ever get into that tier. They were unable to crack into that tier. But are they the 10 seed in the West? Are they that bad? They shouldn't be. And it all comes down to three things. Those personnel limitations I talked about. Two, complete coaching incompetence from Darvin Ham. And then three, a consistent lack of effort and focus. I talk all about the time about basketball character. The willingness to do the things that you have to do to get to the trophy. It is from day one of training camp throughout all of preseason to the every stretch of the season, from the slow points in January to the busy points around the deadline or right after the start of the season in October, to the race at the end of the season through to jockey around for position in the standings, you have to hit these checkpoints in terms of effort and focus and energy and in the paying your dues. You have to pay in blood, sweat, and tears to get to the Larry O'Brien Trophy. It is not easy. You don't get to chill. It's a big part of why I'm starting to get off the Clippers set. The Clippers went from being a team that looked like a dominant two-way basketball team. Now they haven't played defense in several months. And now they look pretty mediocre. That's a big one for me. They're skipping a checkpoint. That checkpoint is you have to keep your foot on the gas. And when there are tiny points in the season, when you start to lose your focus and a couple things don't go your way, the good teams, the teams that hoist the Larry O'Brien, those teams end up quickly digging out of those holes. I remember even the 2020 Lakers, because obviously I covered that team very closely. They lost four games in a row around Christmas. They started 24-3, so they started like crazy good, right? They lost four games in a row. Like, I'm not trying to sit here and pretend like bad stretches don't happen. Of course they do. But for the really good teams, you don't have extended bad stretches. You don't have a 3-10 stretch. You can't get away with it. And again, pointing back to basketball character, a team with good basketball character doesn't do that. A team with good basketball character doesn't have, you know, 40% of the nights over the course of the 82-game regular season where they just come out lifeless. That to me is showing an unwillingness to do the work, because there is work from day one of training camp to the point where you hoist that trophy. It sucks. Like, I'm a huge believer that is a prerequisite to getting to the trophy. You have to attack the regular season from start to finish. All right, I'm done venting about the Lakers.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider's look at the NBA and the culture surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall will give his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. CJ will bring his A-list comedian buddies to keep it light and fire off some hoops takes. Plus, John will be inviting current and former NBA players, friends, and teammates to join the show as well to give their unfiltered accounts of what really goes on in the league from a player's perspective. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yeah, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Moving on to Knicks Kings. Super fun physical game. A lot of guys had nightmare shooting nights. And this is super typical. This is something I talk about a lot on the show. Rock fight basketball games. Like, a lot of times, like, that can cause teams to fall apart in their skill areas of their game. And mainly the idea behind that is like, you become accustomed in your shooting workouts and everything to a certain muscle memory that you go to when you're going into your skill shots and skill footwork and dribble combinations and all that kind of stuff, right? So what happens is like, in a really physical game, there's a level of fatigue and like a kind of like a pain, like you kind of get beat up a little bit, like everything hurts from like you bumping shoulders and knees and hips and everything like that. And all of a sudden you've got like 16 bruises and bumps and stuff from the game. But all of that takes place. And then all of a sudden you find yourself in a catch and shoot situation or a pull up jump shot situation. And it just doesn't feel the same physically because you're exhausted, because you're fatigued, because you're beat up. right? And so Josh Hart goes 2-for-7 in this game. OG Anunoby goes 1-for-8. Dante DiVincenzo goes 1-for-16. De'Aaron Fox goes 5-for-19. Keegan Murray goes 3-for-12. Harrison Barnes goes 5-for-13. The Knicks shot 43% from the field and won. The Kings shot just 35% from the field. Now, first of all, before we go any further, I love this new brand of officiating we're seeing from the NBA for three primary reasons. One, it gives the defenses a fighting chance. NBA offenses had literally become too hard to guard without allowing some sort of physicality. When you give them the amount of skill and athleticism that NBA teams have and give them so much freedom of movement, it's a lost cause and no one's going to be able to get stopped. So first of all, it just gives the defense a fighting chance. Second of all, it will really help us with evaluating playoff teams because this looks more like playoff basketball. And so it'll just help us to sort through the nonsense. Again, I love playoff officiating. We all do. That's what we want it to be like. Why are we ever allowing a regular season to just be different basketball? That should just never be the case. And every single year, it was freedom of movement and tons of scoring and free throws. And then we get to the postseason and the game fundamentally changes. And that doesn't make any sense. It makes more sense for it to be the same throughout. So to me, it'll help us evaluate. But in general, it's just better for the league to have a consistency of play style. And then three, deep down, this is what the players want. It's funny. I've been in probably a few dozen different like men's league things that I've played in my life since I got done playing in college. And no matter where I've been, whether I was in Charlotte, whether I was in Phoenix, whether I was in Tucson, I remember several times where like multiple players have gone up to the officials at certain points in the game or before the game and been like, hey, like we'd prefer it if you guys don't call that much and just let us play. Like that's what players want. Basketball players want freedom to play without the whistle. That's what they want. If they had to choose, if players had to choose between everything's a foul by the book or like discretion and if it's blatant, call it, but like keep the flow of the game, every single basketball player will choose the latter. That's what they want. It's a better television product. It's more fun. There's going to be some complaining. I've seen a lot of guys in the last couple of weeks like driving and missing layups and complaining. That's a natural part of it. And as a competitor, you want points. So like I get it for your team because that's your job, right? But like deep down, this is what the players want. It'll help us evaluate the teams better. And it's just it gives the defenses a fighting chance. It brings more balance to the equation. That said, the Knicks are just better at rock fight basketball than Sacramento is. Even without Julius Randle and Mitchell Robinson, their guards are stocky and physical, whereas the Kings guards are more speed oriented, right? And there was not much available at the rim in this game because both teams were aggressively helping and digging down and just packing the paint. There were 171 field goal attempts in this game. Only 33 of them were in the restricted area. And only 19 of those 33 went in. We had 14 misses in the restricted area in this game. It became about jump shooting, but specifically jump shooting while being tired and beat up, which again is a fundamentally different type of jump shooting type of game. And the Knicks are just better built for that sort of thing. The Knicks took 55 jump shots and got 0.86 points per shot. The Kings took 50 and they got 0.76 points per shot. That really was the difference of the game. You saw that in the pull-up shooting too, like the two main creators, right? Jalen Brunson, 8-for-15 on pull-up jump shots, 4-for-7 on pull-up threes. De'Aaron Fox, 2-for-12 on pull-up jump shots, 1-for-6 on pull-up threes. Huge difference in this game. By the way, that's a season-long trend. Jalen Brunson's a better pull-up shooter than De'Aaron Fox. Has been forever. And De'Aaron Fox has taken a leap this year. Best pull-up shooting a season of his career. Not as good as Jalen Brunson, right? Like, that's what you kind of expect in that situation. OG Anunoby brings a certain physicality. Isaiah Hartenstein is a big guy that I wanted to spend some time on today. Only had 7 points in this game, but he had 4 blocks and a steal, 14 rebounds, including 4 offensive rebounds, and I thought he was a substantially better defensive player in this game than Sabonis. It's one of those weird games where, like, if you look at the box score, Sabonis gets this 20-point double-double, and obviously, like, it looks like Sabonis was the better player. I thought Isaiah Hartenstein, like, flat-out outplayed Sabonis in this game. First of all, held Sabonis to just 1-for-5 from the field with 4 turnovers in the second half. Had some huge offensive plays at the end of the game. That curl to Jalen Brunson where he got the and one. I put that clip on Twitter. And then there's a big play late where Kings got it to four, and Hartenstein just drove right through Sabonis' chest and got all the way to the rim and made an and one layup to put the Knicks back up seven. Like, I thought he was awesome in this particular game. Held up much better defensively in pick and roll too, and that's the key, because the Knicks on the other end were really torching Sabonis. They got 1.3 points per pick and roll for the entire game, including passes. That's like off the charts good. That's a 130 offensive rating and ball screens. They were torching Sabonis, hitting pull-ups against him in drop coverage. Obviously Brunson, who we've talked a lot about, but even Alec Burks got him twice in the fourth quarter. Once with a floater and once with a pull-up jumper, where Sabonis was just hanging too far back and not doing enough to bother the ball handler. On the other end, Hartenstein was just better. Had some huge defensive plays down the stretch. Held the Knicks in, as a team, held Sacramento to 0.96 points per ball screen and 0.4 points per handoff, which is obviously a huge part of the Kings' offense. So, like, they just did a much better job guarding screening actions than the Knicks did. And I want to, before we put all of it on Sabonis and Hartenstein, it was more diligent work from the guards too. Like, this was a good defensive performance from both teams, to be clear. All you have to do is look at the box score. But the Knicks did make fewer mistakes. There were some big late game mistakes from the Kings guards defensively. There was a big one late where the Kings were up by four in the fourth quarter. And Bojan Bogdanović came off of like a pin down and knocked down a three. And it was just bad defense from De'Aaron Fox. De'Aaron Fox was guarding Miles McBride, and Malik Monk was guarding Bojan Bogdanović. And literally McBride just goes and sets a basic little pin screen for Bogdanović. Bogdanović comes off to the top of the key. De'Aaron Fox is literally just standing like right around the foul line, not even in a defensive stance. And so when McBride's in trail position and kind of gets hit on the screen a little bit, when Malik Monk is in trail position and kind of gets hit on the screen a little bit, Bojan Bogdanović just breaks wide open and knocks down the shot. And it's like, that's a key mistake in the game. Like that, because again, in that group, with that bench group, especially when it's got Alec Burks and Bojan Bogdanović in it, to Alec Burks and Bojan Bogdanović's credit, they made some plays in that fourth quarter stretch. They each had a little scoring burst that they went on that helped kind of keep things afloat. But like, a lot of it was defensive breakdown, Sabonis and drop, like sitting too far low on that guard screening action by De'Aaron Fox. Then the late game possession. So there was a sequence late where the Kings played really good defense on a series of scoring. So this was after the Knicks went up seven. They got a bunch of stops in a row against Jalen Brunson. They were running guard screens to try to get Keon Ellis switched off of Jalen Brunson to try to get Malik Monk. And then occasionally they'd bring Hartenstein in to try to get him to go at Sabonis, where they'd run more of a drop. But basically Brunson was operating at the top of the key and they were running these screening actions. They defended all of them really well, except for one. The one where Keon Ellis was going like this, looking around, and Jalen Brunson just waited for him to turn his head, and then he went off the dribble. And like, I get it, like Keon Ellis, they had been screening him from both sides, and so he's really just trying to get ahead of whatever that action is coming from. But like, the ball is the number one priority in that situation. So it's like, you do a really good job most of the game, but just some critical mistakes defensively. And like that, by the way, is kind of a theme for the Kings this year. They're a team that, as I've talked about all season, they're a team that is capable of being very good defensively, but it's not their habit. It's not their identity. And so too often they slip back into their worst tendencies. Biggest sequence of the game was actually before this play. It was 84-82. And Knicks got the ball. And Jalen Brunson curls off of an Isaiah Hartenstein dribble handoff and fakes the handoff. And then on the back cut, there's a tiny, tiny window. And Hartenstein throws this beautiful bounce pass that hits Brunson in stride. He gets an and one. They go down to the other end, and there's a ball screen action for Harrison Barnes, and Hartenstein blocks him at the rim. So two massive plays from Hartenstein. They go down to the other end. The Kings play good defense, switch a guard screen. They get a great contest on a Brunson pull-up three, and he misses it. But right after that, Domantas Sabonis gets the rebound and throws the ball way too far up the floor to Keon Ellis and turns it over. Knicks bring the ball in bounds. And this is the really weird play. Most of the second half on Brunson ball screens, they'd been blitzing with Sabonis, and it was working. Sabonis was applying good ball pressure with his hands. Brunson wasn't able to get the ball to the pocket, so he was having to throw swing passes. I was actually talking about this earlier, like when you apply really good pressure and blitzes, the pocket pass isn't open because they just can't get the pass through. And so they were forcing Brunson to make swing passes, and they were rotating out of it pretty well. The blitz was working. And then randomly on this play, Sabonis just sits way back in a drop coverage, and Brunson just walks right into a pull-up three and knocks it down. huge sequence in the game. It's a two-point game. Hartenstein makes a couple of big plays on both ends of the floor. Sabonis makes a couple of critical mistakes, and suddenly it's a seven-point game. Also, another example of how I thought Hartenstein outplayed Sabonis despite the box score numbers. Like, just when it came to the big moments of the game, the big swing possessions, it was Hartenstein making plays and Sabonis making mistakes. That's why I was calling that specifically out. Anyway, that run put the Knicks up seven, and then they were able to withstand a handful of additional shots. Like, Malik Monk hit a big three in the corner. That kind of got it close. Biggest takeaways from the game, though, shot making in these kinds of games is just different. And De'Aaron Fox has become a good shot maker, but his advantage is speed. And I thought he got a little bit carried away with trying to match Jalen Brunson with pull-up shooting when Brunson's just better than him at that. And so that takes me to my second biggest takeaway, which was Fox's shot selection. Like, he took some really tough pull-up twos early in the clock when he clearly didn't have that shot working for him in this particular game. Like, again, he was 2 for 12 on pull-up jumpers in this game. So, like, early clock pull-up twos that are heavily contested, they just don't make sense unless you already are in rhythm, which he was not at this point. So the two in particular that I wanted to highlight, there was a spinning jumper on Alec Burks. He had a cleared side ISO on the right side of the floor, but tons of time, and he just goes into this wild spinning jump shot that Alec Burks defends perfectly, and I'm looking down, and there's 14 seconds on the shot clock. And it's like, why are you taking such a difficult, low-value pull-up two when you haven't been making it tonight with 14 on the shot clock? Like, work for something easier first, and then take that if it gets into a late clock situation. Later on in the game, he takes a step-back 20-foot jump shot against Jalen Brunson with 18 seconds on the shot clock. Once again, not in rhythm. Haven't made any attempts to try to find something easier. Already a really tough shot off of a dribble combination and some tough footwork. Brunson's right there. Wasn't even great separation. And literally, you just took the ball 6 seconds earlier. And so some of that is like, it's hard to win games when your best player is getting so soundly out-executed by his counterpart in Jalen Brunson. And that was something that really stood out off the screen yesterday. There was a play early in the fourth quarter, too, where the Kings had no numbers in transition. It was a 3-on-5 break. And De'Aaron Fox drove right into Bojan Bogdanović at the rim and just threw up a left-handed layup that literally missed by several feet. It wasn't even close. And it's like, it was just a tough decision-making game from De'Aaron Fox. And honestly, like, when I look at De'Aaron Fox this season, there's so much good in terms of his improvement as a jump shooter and his confidence in his jump shot. But that next step for him is like really identifying what the low-hanging fruit is for him and capitalizing on that stuff to increase his efficiency and treating more of this tough shot-making thing as a counter, rescue possessions, when I'm in rhythm kind of thing, rather than just like a regular part of his shot diet, if that makes sense. And then two final takeaways. Isaiah Hartenstein is just a really good basketball player. And like, obviously you want Mitchell Robinson back, but even if they just get Julius Randle back and Mitchell Robinson's not able to come back, like, that is still a deeply talented and deeply physically imposing front line. And I'm really excited to see what the Knicks can do in a postseason series. And then lastly, like I mentioned earlier, the Kings being capable of defending, but it not being their habit. One of the reasons why I harp on habits is like, when games get close late, and when the shit hits the fan, like when things start to not go right for you, you tend to fall back on your habits. Your habits are what carry you in those situations, right? It's kind of like if you run into a stretch in your personal life where like you just have a ton of stuff going on, like busy calendar with work, busy social calendar, maybe one or two outside circumstances that have thrown a wrench into everything. If you are, in your daily habits, a very efficient time manager, you will get through it. Because you just have these habits where it's like, okay, the shit's hitting the fan all around me, but I'm just going to put my head down and I'm going to work and I'm going to come out on the other side of this, right? But if all that shit happens and you have bad time management and efficiency habits, that could be what breaks you in a lot of ways, right? And like, that's kind of the way I feel about basketball too. Like, when you are the kind of person where it is your habit to do these little things well, then in a big possession late or in a situation where a couple things have gone wrong, your habit will be to continue to do those things and it will help you regain control of the situation. It is not a habit for De'Aaron Fox to be an all defensive minded player. It is something he can do. If I trimmed a dozen clips, I could show you a highlight film that shows that De'Aaron Fox is an all defense caliber defender. But in a critical fourth quarter possession, he can fall asleep. And like that to me is not just a Fox problem. It's a down the roster problem for the Kings. They are capable of it, but it is not in their identity. It is not a habit for them. And so they have a tendency to slip back into some of their worst tendencies when the shit hits the fan. And I thought that game against the Knicks was a big example of that. All right, guys, that is all I have for today. We'll be back tomorrow. We got a jam-packed Sunday slate. So we got a lot of fun games to break down tomorrow, as well as power rankings. I will see you guys then.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yeah, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.